the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. I have to record a very brief ad read for the show today since we got carried away in the intro. Forgot to mention our show sponsor, ShakeBay, the best place for Canadians to buy and sell, though you should never sell, your Bitcoin. Cheap spreads, a great mobile app, and of course the Shaking Sats if you use our promo code to sign up, CBP, Charlie Beta Peter, plus the Sats Back Visa card, which is sick. You can spend your CAD balance and get a little bit of Sats back, which is, man, you know, as the price goes up and the supply tightens, those Sats are going to mean a lot. So definitely take a look at ShakePay if you haven't already. Charlie Beta Peter, CBP is the promo code. We hope to sign up. Friends and enemies, welcome. There's a bubble in my throat. Can you hear it?
A little bit, yeah. You sound all right, Joey.
Let me just cancel that out. Welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, number 50 episodes. Mm. This is week 50 of Len and I getting together, removing ourselves from our family and romantic obligations, and talking about the hardest money the world has ever known. My name is Joey. As I said earlier, my co-host Len and the other panel. Buddy, how are you doing today? You had an eventful weekend, I understand.
Yeah, you know, we'll go through that in momentarily. Yeah, I'm wonderful, Joey. It's been a great week, great day, great everything. Too bad the price of Bitcoin isn't cooperating, but I don't really give a rat's whatever. Because you know what? In the long run, I know where this guy's going. How are you, Joey?
I'm good, man. I was enjoying today just watching my calf twitch real nice when I pull my foot around, move my foot around. So we got some good Achilles rehab update there. Horizon Forbidden West is easily the best game I've ever played. It's not close. It's better than God of War 4, which came out a few years ago on the PS4. I'm looking forward to what that studio produces in the near future. But on the financial side, Len, as you mentioned, pretty gory last few days. Today especially, I had some big losses in what I would consider blue chip holdings: Apple, Amazon, Microsoft, pretty much everything except oil and gas falling off a cliff today, which whatever. I mean, I got enough oil and gas, you know, at least on paper to support me in the event of a worldwide collapse and commodity super cycle. But all that,
as long as you could parlay that to fill up your car, you're all right.
I show my XEG well simple. Hey, I got a lot of
yeah, hook me up. I got stake in the game.
We got lots to talk about tonight. Before we get started with the price, do you want to do a little housekeeping? We should talk about the anniversary episode 1 year coming up.
But okay, before I even go there, I just wanted to mention that what happened this past weekend, we had a phenomenal event at Tahini's. And the event itself was sponsored partially, I guess you could say, by ShakePay. So this was a Bitcoin meetup that took place at Tahini's in Hamilton. And I was lucky enough to have attended it because it was just a fantastic gathering with a whole bunch of wonderful people. I met some people for the very first time, some of whom who watched the show are fans too. And what was really awesome was all the food there was paid for by ShakePay. So we were ShakePaid. So I just want to give a thank you to our show sponsor, ShakePay, because they did a fantastic job to, you know, to represent that. And they give us, I got a hat, so I'm happy. So yeah. Yeah. So that's that. I just want to say thank you and to everybody that came out and said hello to me. It was a great event.
Yeah. It looked like a lot of fun. I wish I could have been there, obviously still recovering, but next time I'd like to go. And I can't wait to meet a lot of you guys, man. I got a lot of nice messages from people on Saturday asking if I was going, how the rehab was, and I'm looking forward to seeing all you guys. A lot of great pictures, too. I know some friends of ours went from real life went to that event as well, which is always good to see. You know, the word about hard money is spreading in no small part thanks to the everyday struggles coming from fiscal and monetary response policy over the last 2 years, 10 years, 20 years, whatever. As far as the anniversary episode, so here's what Len and I are thinking, okay? Since on the Christmas episode, we did basically a run and gun 10 minutes, 15 minutes with, you know, a bunch of people who we had on the show and supported us early, we thought that this time we'd do something a little different. We want you guys to be a part of the 1 year experience. So we're going to scrap the episode format that we usually use. And instead, we're going to ask you guys to send us in audio questions via the Anchor submit a voice note thing, which I'll post in the show notes. I'll put it in there for you guys, or it might actually be in there automatically now that I'm thinking about it. Put your questions in there, put your comments in there, and we're going to rip through them for however long it takes to get through. I shouldn't say however long it takes. If we get like 50, we're not doing all 50, but if we get like 10 or 15 or 20 of you guys submitting that stuff, which shouldn't really be that hard given the numbers, we'll do this. We'll do this, you know, Q&A sort of episode for number 52 in 2 weeks.
So, and just if you're shy, you could always submit it by email. You could CanadianBitcoiners@gmail.com. You could send it by Twitter. You could DM either Joy or myself. So there's a number of different ways.
Don't be shy. Just use audio. Just send me a voice note. Yeah, send me a voice note. Like, what the fuck? What do you mean? What do you mean? Don't give people an out. We haven't even started receiving comments yet.
You never know. We might get a banger of a question that's not submitted by audio.
So what? Then we'll rip it. I'll get someone who has a little bit of testicular fortitude to pretend they submitted it. Just do the read.
I get my brother-in-law
to do all the reads. Like he's the producer of the show. So on top of that, Len, I think we should give away some sats. And we're going to try to give some away. We haven't decided how exactly we're going to give them away yet. But we're definitely going to give away a bunch of stuff or a bunch of sats that day. We're still working with ShakePay, see if we can work something out for that, maybe some merch, whatever. They've been a great sponsor so far. You know, they're obviously busy given recent events and their sort of commitment to a lot of those things that are in the news cycle. But we'd like to make it worth your time because you guys really have mm-hmm. propelled the show to where it is today.
Exactly. It's going to be a good event. Regardless, we're kind of going to be going off script. So if you're looking for the same old, you're going to see us with our, you know, we'll be unbuttoning our shirts here and going a little bit casual for this for that episode. So please tune in, submit a question if you got them, and we'll be happy to answer them as long as we deem them to be something we can answer. Not everything we can guarantee we can answer. We'll do our level best to do so. But yeah, it's going to be a good episode, and it's been so far a great run to the 1 year anniversary, Joy. It's incredible we're getting there.
It's been amazing. Let's keep it going tonight. The price of Bitcoin in American mm-hmm. dollars, Len, at the moment, $38,178.73.
It's been flat, and in Canadian, it's $48,708. So, yeah, well, we got ways to go. A lot of time, no rush. I'm in it for
an hour and a half. Yeah.
Yeah. Just hang in there. And the last thing I just want to touch base here is we had Derpy Darpus, I think he wrote a review on Apple Podcast. And yeah, he's saying that we're his favorite show, and he's got 15 shows in his phone, and we're tied for number one in the spot. So basically he's very happy with us. Yeah, anybody out there that's gonna, you know, write a review for us, I'll be happy to read it out. Also, if you could put a review on the Spotify app, you can't write a review, it's just simply just a star review. So if you can leave a 5-star if you like our stuff, because
how are we doing on Spotify? Have you seen the review column there? Should I go look?
Yeah, right, 4.9 out of 5. So I'm not sure who the
4.9.
Yeah. So who is that no coiner that didn't give us a 5-star review? I don't know.
Yeah, we got 37 reviews. 4.9 is the total. Wow. That guy who was mad about UBI in the Reddit comments, which we may discuss after the show is over.
No. You know what? I'm calling an audible, and you know what? Let's talk about it right now, because the show, I wrote up something about this. I think we're on the same wavelength, but yeah, I just had to call an audible in this. So really, let's talk a little bit more about UBI and the two different bills that are floating around in the Senate and the House of Commons, C-223. And S-233, and these bills are going to set up a national framework for guaranteed livable basic income for Canadians over the age of 17. So this got a lot of traction when we talked about this. I'm not going to say where the traction came from, like on which platform or who the person is, but we've been called, Joey, and I quote, disgusting, lying filth.
And that's so rough, man. I've called a lot of people.
I just want to explain, like, it, you know, essentially it's because we were spewing commentary that was, quote, anti-UBI. And really, the whole point of it was, I was talking about this is going to cost a lot of money, and you were backing me up on that. And it's just, it's leading to no will to actually do anything if you're getting paid money to stay at home, or at least to getting money to supplement your income. So it doesn't lead to long-term health for the economy, to the country, and so forth. So I did some research on this too. So we might be discussing lying filth to this guy, and we might be spewing anti-UBI, Joey, but I could tell you who's not, and it's the Parliamentary Budget Officer, the PBO. And who is this? Well, it's a Government of Canada agency or authority here. They provide independent, authoritative, and nonpartisan financial and economic analysis. And they reported on UBI back in April 7, 2021. They're not disgusting, lying filth. We may be, but they are not. And they were using the parameters based on a 2017 Ontario UBI pilot project. So there was some information they could go on, some relatively recent Canadian information. So they're not pulling stuff out of the air. They're using some real life data that they could report on. And based on this report, estimates are showing that people will eventually work less hours as a result of UBI. And they call it GBI, guaranteed basic income. And quoting here, it says, based on estimated reductions to household labor supply and reduction to the GPI, the PBO estimates that the cost of this behavioral change alone, and this is lower tax revenues and higher GBI expenses, will amount to $3.1 to $3.3 billion per year for the period. So just by instituting a CBI, you're going to have people work less hours, and as a result, they're going to be able to have less taxes collected from them, and they will collect more UBI. And what the PBO, this not disgusting lying filth agency, said, they said it's going to cost $3.1 to $3.3 billion per year. And also the PBO goes on and they say how much it's going to cost in totality. Well, they estimate in 2021-2022, if UBI was set up, it would cost $85 billion, and this would balloon to $93 billion in 2025-26. And this is... considering that they're not taking into consideration inflation, which it's much more prevalent now than it was in April 2021. So that $93 billion for 2025-26 will be much, much higher. This is a lot of money for a country like Canada, because I took a look to see what is Canada's total revenue, and I took a look for the past few years. 2018-2019 was $330 billion Canada raked in revenue. In 2019-2020, we raked in $334 billion. And then it went down from there in 2021, for obvious reasons, to $316 billion. So I'm going to use the last big number we have, $334 billion. That $85 billion that they are suggesting, that's just for 21-22. I'm not using the higher estimation by the PBO. That represents 25% of the total revenue that Canada is going to rake in. That's insane. But also, let's look at the expenses of Canada. Now, I'm going to use that same year, 1920. Canada's expenses were $338 billion. I'm not using the expenses from 2021. Obviously, I'd be cherry picking because expenses went crazy. I'm using this as the last quote unquote normal year, and expenses for Canada were $338 billion. If you add on the UBI on top of that, that would increase their expenses to $423 billion, essentially 25% increase on total expenses just for UBI. I understand the report does say it's going to lift some people out of poverty. But this is kind of like the same way of raising minimum wage for everyone to $50 an hour. It just makes no sense to me. There's no way this can be funded in totality with taxpayer dollars. If anybody is saying that, I have a bridge to sell that person. And reason why is because that $85 billion, that's the lesser of the two numbers I'm using, has to be funded somewhere. Sure, it'll be funded some with the spending of the UBI, but the majority of which is going to be funded by businesses and higher income people. So you're going to have to go to people that make more money, go to teachers, go to doctors, and go to people like that and say, you know what? I know you're paying lots in income tax right now, but you're going to have to pay an extra 20, 30, 40% on top of your income just to help pay for this. What are they going to say? They're going to give you the middle finger. You know why? Because it doesn't make sense. UBI does not make sense because you are just feeding the people that are going to, they're just taking the money and they're not improving themselves. It is essentially proof of stake. It is getting paid just simply for living. It's not proof of work. It's proof of stake. And as Bitcoiners, we are proof of work people. And I'm giving it to this person. you are my no coiner of the week. I'm not even going to name your name, but you are my no coiner of the week. And I give you the opportunity now to give me some rebuttal on the same platform you did. I gave you numbers. I'm giving you numbers from the Parliamentary Budget Office. This is a nonpartisan, and it's nonpartisan financial and economic analysis. They are not disgusting filth. We may be, but they are not. So please refute their information. I give you the opportunity. Thank you.
Should we just wrap it up?
No, I mean, if you're going to call us out, go ahead, but expect some rebuttal.
It's true. You know, we try again, like try to answer honestly and like without being confrontational on Reddit, because there's no benefit to that. But Len's right. You know, like we're not trying to lie to you. And like I said in my reply, you know, if the issue is with our opinion on UBI, I can't really help you with that, right? But the whole back of the napkin math thing for the cost, Len is giving you their numbers from the PBO. Those things are not really disputable. And the policies and sort of rollout costs and administration costs and all these things associated with UBI, they're never accounted for properly by the UBI crowd, in my view. Those numbers are only going to go up. Len talked a little bit there about the rising tide and comparing it to minimum wage. I think that's an apt comparison. And again, like Reddit's a great place to do long form. Like Twitter, you know, I'm not going to reply to a lot of tweets that call me an idiot or sludge or whatever that guy went with, filth, I guess. Like it's fine to do that. God knows I've pulled the trigger on Twitter too quickly a number of times over the last 10 years. But if you have a chance, reply, respond, and give us the counterpoint with that level of data to back it up, because I just don't think there is one.
Yeah, I would love to hear it, because, you know, the Parliamentary Budget, I mean, I want to see if you could refute any of the data they found. And maybe you can. Maybe you could fund this $85 billion, which is essentially a quarter of the overall revenue that Canada generates. You could fund this with taxation. I'd like to see it. I don't believe it's possible, but you know what? The floor is yours. Go ahead. And until you prove me wrong, I'm going to believe what I believe.
Let's get into the A block. We got some good stuff, some current stuff with no axe to grind this week.
Let's talk about the Bank of Canada, which they came out this past week and they raised interest rates by 25 basis points. Then that essentially increased the overnight lending rates to 0.5%. So, surprisingly to me, Joey, the markets weren't really impacted by this decision. And I suspect maybe this news was baked into the price of all the stocks out there. Could be wrong, but that's just my gut feeling. And one of the things Tiff was talking about, Tiff Macklem, the Bank of Canada governor, he was talking about QT, which is quantitative tightening. It's something we haven't really heard too much the past little while. And this is a slowing down of buying bonds from the government of Canada, which essentially added new liquidity to the market. And, you know, it's maybe going to give the people overlooking the money printer time to change the toner. And maybe that's just one of the reasons why they're going to go ahead with the QT. But through QT, the Bank of Canada plans not just to not replace bonds as they mature. So they're hoping this will effectively have the rate of reducing inflation. I don't know if this is going to be reality, but this is their plan. And you know, let's see if this actually works out. And it's speculated that with the higher, albeit a small jump in the borrowing rate or the borrowing cost and QT, this will have an impact in the housing market, which has been running red hot for quite some time. And the raising of the interest rates will also impact those who carry debt, because servicing that debt is now going to be a little bit more expensive than it was 7 days ago. And given how the markets reacted to this news, and with the reaction appearing to be relatively neutral, in my opinion, I'm wondering now if they're going to be raising rates again this year, because it just seems like the markets didn't really care that much. So maybe this might give them fuel for the fire to keep doing this. But the real test will be when the Fed decides to raise rates. It looks like it's going to happen within the next week or so, week and a half. And that's going to be the real test here. And if things go sour, if the Fed raises rates, it might force the Bank of Canada to reconsider their position to move rates any higher than it is right now. And there's also a chance that inflation will remain flat. And hear me out, Joey. This could be like really out there, but there's I have some rationale here. If you look at the inflation from last year, because this is a year-over-year thing, the jump was very high between February and March. So the next time they report on inflation numbers, there's a chance that inflation for the next time they report it, is going to be slightly lower than 5.1%. And if it doesn't jump over 1.1%, essentially, because that's how much it jumped from January to February of 2021. If it doesn't jump by 1.1%, the inflation is going to be going down this next coming reporting period. So that's going to be insane. And I'm wondering if they're going to be using this. This is kind of a shell game, like the CPI index and what's included in it and this whole year over year inflation reporting period. It's all just a shell game, but they might use this as leverage to go ahead and increase interest rates down the line. I'm not saying for sure that we might be flat, but it's possibility they might show that the inflation rates might be going a little bit lower than it did the previous month, which would be absolutely insane. And that just goes to show you that the CPI is just, it's a shell game, and what's included in there is just a joke. So really what they're going to be trying to do is they're going to try raising rates. They're going to try doing the quickening of QT and trying to lower inflation rates overall, like in general, which is going to be quite a challenge for them to do. And I'm skeptical that they could achieve any of these goals. But you know what, to be honest, who knows at this point? Anything is within the realm of possibility. I had no idea Russia would lock horns with Ukraine. So what the hell do I know? I'm just sitting here in the sidelines and just seeing things play out in front of me.
Do you think that this is a legit rate hike? I say this in a way that, I'll be honest, is sort of self-serving, because it's a cop-out for me. I said they weren't going to raise, but I don't view a quarter point as a rate hike. And I'll tell you why. And this is a shout out to Nick and Tom Carrazza from the Rockstar Real Estate Pod, on which we will be appearing in a few weeks.
Yes, yes.
I was listening to them today. They were doing mano a mano back and forth, two brothers, about the current state of affairs in Canada. Do you know how much? So this is the story, right? We're going to fight inflation with rate hikes, okay? And I know that's oversimplifying. There's like a whole bond element to that as well. But let's just pretend that this is the way this works. We raise inflation and that fights, or we raise, Freudian slip there. We raise rates and fight inflation. Do you know how much 25 basis points is, Len, on $100,000 in mortgage?
Yeah, it was, I remember seeing on the average mortgage was like $55 a month, and that $100,000 is way lower.
It's yeah. $12, yeah, yeah, on every $100,000 you own.
It's not life and death, but it's just death by a thousand cuts.
This is not inflation fighting, Len. It's a Starbucks trip. Like these two things are not the same. Okay. And so we talked about how a 25 basis point hike would be a save face play for the bank more than anything, and an opportunity for them to put one slug back in the revolver for when they got to shoot it again in 6 months. And they're going to have to shoot it again in 6 months. Bet on that. Okay. So that's one piece. If you think the bank has any plans to raise rates, any substantial amount, okay. The average mortgage nowadays in Canada, we said the average house price in Ontario, I think, was like $800,000 or $900,000. So let's say somehow you managed to get $180,000, the 20% down. You got a lot of money sitting in that mortgage. If you think that the bank is going to raise rates in such a way that will tank asset prices, because people will have to sell to cover these interest payments on all these loans that are related to the prime rate in Canada. So if you think they're going to do that and destroy the market, you're dreaming, man. Not to mention that the debt is as high as it's ever been, and so the service payments would also be too high. You know, that's a whole other shell game, like you mentioned, but something to keep in mind, okay? The problem that the Bank of Canada and other central banks are having is not one of CPI. Though I agree that the CPI is tainted, I think everyone knows it's tainted, including, it's like one of those, it's like that meme where they know you know. They know you know that they know that you know, and yet everyone plays along anyways, right? It's just it's a thing where everyone turns a blind eye. We pretend everything's fine because it's more comfortable that way. That's one part of their problem. But the CPI, you know, already doesn't include energy. It's got a tainted measure for housing, a tainted and changing constantly measure for food. And so no one really takes that seriously in the Twitterverse, on sort of Bitcoin Twitter and financial Twitter. This has been the case for a long time. And this group will continue to expand as inflation starts to hit more people. And people are looking at the CPI number going, 4%. Like, I can't even afford groceries, man. I had mini wheats for dinner last night. I'm broke. And I had to buy the sale box. Couldn't even get the regular white frosting. Had to get like the strawberry cinnamon frosting no one wants. Okay. So that's one problem. The CPI, though, they can fudge it all they want. There's no mechanism for that fudging of the CPI to help them win the information game. the burr, like in the chat when you were talking, okay, about UBI, everyone in the chat is going burr, burr, burr. No one said burr, burr, burr 18 months ago, 24 months ago. It's brand new, but now everyone gets it, okay? These hockey stick charts for M2 that had to be wiped off the Fed, you know, the Fred website, because they can't continue posting the M2. It's going to Mars, right? It's going to be there before Elon. And so you got that problem. Then you got these charts from the last couple of days for wheat, okay? Have you seen the wheat chart? It's up it's up like some ungodly amount. It's a straight line up. For nickel, same thing, 70% gain in the price of nickel today. West Texas Intermediate crude, same thing. You know, these giant gaps up on a weekend are insane, okay? They are insane. And everyone can see them thanks to Twitter. They just get memed. Eventually, Len, people are going to start to notice stuff in grocery stores. The CPI does not avert eyes from that stuff. The meat getting more and more expensive. The meat being out all the time, okay? Lack of inventory. Len, do you know what it's going to look like here in Ontario? The number of photos that are going to be on the internet because of two things, really. One, because it's extremely shareable. And two, because it's an election cycle. When 87 octane is $2 a liter, it's going to happen in the next 3 or 4 months. Like, this is an unavoidable reality. And so everyone is going to start asking these questions. How can inflation be 4% when gas has doubled in price in 18 months? How can this be the case? It's the case because the inflation number is slanted, as we know. Mm-hmm. Now, I would push back a little bit on your housing thing, the correction. I think the housing market correction is a pipe dream, okay? That's an energy joke. You can laugh if you want, or you can save your laughter for later. It's a pipe dream that's never going to materialize. There's now 3 years, basically, if not more, worth of pent-up demand. So you got a triple-wide cohort of people looking for homes that will buy anything that sells at list or is listed a little below market or is listed just a little above market. And it's going to immediately gap up any price correction that would have happened because there's too many people in the market looking to buy because they haven't been able to buy for the last 3 years. And so you get a feedback loop where no one wants to sell to anyone who's waiting. People have to continue waiting. The prices go up and it just keeps running. It just never stops. This will never stop short of a major like reset catalyst. And I don't know what that's going to be, but it's very clear we're on the way. The best part about all this, Len, is still, I don't know if Macklem is saying this, but still Powell and these other guys on US television still say it's temporary. They still say it's on the way out. It's peaking. It's whatever. Who believes this still? How can you possibly believe this still? Have you seen the gold futures contracts? Like yesterday, the gold futures contracts were up at like $2,025. Like that's a significant jump in the price of gold. And I this is not a gold podcast, okay? But I will just mention one thing here.
We're far from it.
The furthest from it, okay? Eons, light years. But I'll just mention one thing. And Larry Lepard, who I would like to get on the show, and I should tweet him because I think he'd be a good guest.
Mm-hmm.
He says this all the time, and he's spot on. There are two fire alarms that the Federal Reserve and global market participants look at to determine whether or not there is an issue in inflation. One is gold and one is oil. And so the paper market on those things is very, very, very complex. There's many gold bugs, and Peter Schiff argues this as well, that believe that the price of gold is artificially suppressed by paper markets in order to stop these fire alarms from ringing. Because as soon as gold gets to 22 or 2300, everyone's going to panic because that's too much. And that means something is wrong with the money. And if something's wrong with the money, it's a confidence crisis. And it leads to a number of, you know, tentacles in the financial system that would be a disaster. Also, Yochi's in the chat saying it's Luke Groman. Maybe it's Groman and not Lawrence Lepard. So I could have that wrong, Yochi. You could be right. But these fire alarms are important. You're seeing the oil one start to unravel here. Oil should not be $125 a barrel, okay? And I'll just mention here one thing because it made me laugh. So maybe it'll make you laugh too, right? There's a video going around on Twitter of a Trump United Nations address from his presidency.
Oh yeah, when they were laughing at the Germans.
I don't know what year it is, but he is laying out word for word exactly what is happening now. You cannot be dependent on oil, Russian oil, if you're a European country, because you will be intimidated, bullied, and neutered when Russia decides to show an aggressive stance. And he mentions by name, Germany is going to be completely dependent on Russian oil if they do not do an about face on their policy position right now. And the camera cuts to the German delegation and they're laughing. Who the fuck do you think is laughing now? Because in the New York Times, the German chancellor is saying today, we cannot sanction Russian oil or we will freeze. How's that feel? You should have seen this coming, okay? When you outsource your energy policy to a Nordic teenager and let people with signs and pink hats dictate energy for you and your country, you get fucked. And this is what you're seeing now. I hope that we learn the lesson from this, but Len, I gotta tell you, I do not think we're going to. And that's why I'm still buying Bitcoin at more than I ever have, because I see this stuff and there's just no lesson to be learned here for these people. And it drives me insane.
So I want to go back to your CPI discussion, your comments over there. You know, the people that do buy into that, Joey, are the people that are still watching CNN or CBC or whatever.
It's the people and that's, that are too busy, right? The ones that are most, we talked about these people before, the people that just right. don't have the bandwidth to look on Twitter and go, holy shit, fuel isn't even in the CPI. Mm-hmm. Meat isn't even in the CPI. The people yeah. who need to know the most don't know. And it's so frustrating.
And so, as you say, they don't have time, or maybe they just don't care to that level of, they just don't care that much because they're okay enough because they own their house or mostly own their house. So they're not really impacted by a lot of this. They're a little bit shielded from a lot of these price increases, but they're the ones that care, that don't really care too much about this shell game with your CPI. And when they propose it, it's 5.1% for the month. They're okay with that. And they kind of buy that and they swallow it whole and they keep going. They're not going to go on Twitter. You're getting a viewpoint that is very much different than what those people are getting. So what you're seeing and digesting is going to be much different than those people. So, and not only that, also when they talk in official offices, they're going to be referring to the numbers coming out from the Bank of Canada. And they're going to say it's 5.1%. And it's not like you're using a source that has historically been wrong. Historically, they've been okay with their message, and it's not like, you know, that it's was propaganda before.
I disagree. So, I honestly disagree with that. I think I think if you look at the measuring stick, if you look at the measuring stick they've been using, like it's so egregious now that it's front page news.
Yeah, but, it is. But it hasn't been in the past.
It has been, and the reason I know it has been is because the price of houses was going ape shit before 2 years ago.
For
sure. The price of assets was going ape shit before 2 years ago. Rich people are not keeping cash. They're not keeping cash, not because it decreases 2% every year, because it decreases 10% every year. And so now that they're saying it's like 5 or 6% or 8 or whatever it is in the States, it's 20%. It's at least that much. Like
wasn't 10 years ago.
I think it was bad 10 years ago too. I don't know if it was so much like worse than what's being reported now, but I think that it was just as slanted and untrue a decade ago as it was today.
It was much more easy to swallow. And even if it was not true, it was not true to a big degree that you could say, oh shit, this is really bad, because it was small enough of increments. Maybe over a period of 10, 15 years, you can say, wow, it's not what they're saying. But year to year, it really wasn't. So that's one thing. And the second thing, you were talking about the housing market just going to continually go up. I'm going to counter that, Joey. The one thing that makes houses go up in prices is the ability to get cheap credit. And once cheap credit is no longer available, it's just impossible in my eyes for the housing prices to keep going up. One way to stem cheap credit would be to increase rates. Now, this is kind of a token increase, 25 basis points, but it is a step in the right direction from trying to deal with higher housing costs. So when you limit the amount of cheap capital that is available, and plus the stress test, now that it's going to be slightly higher than it was 7 days ago, I'm not saying this is going to be a game changer. The housing market is still going to be pretty hot, but it's not going to be as hot as it was 7 days ago. The spring market is coming upon us. You know, we'll see what happens in 3-4 months. We'll see if things kind of level off, because it can't sustain this pace forever.
I'm ready to get my house ready to sell again. My wife and I are talking about it again, because I just can't, like, I can't pass it up. And okay, I don't want to argue about this forever, because I feel
it's a good topic.
Like, I know, but I do feel like we should talk about it. That I think the housing thing, like the market equilibrium will continue to adjust higher because of the
extra, sure.
because there'll just be extra buyers, and so it may not be 50% a year, but I don't think it's going to be under 20% a year. Like, how could it ever be under 20% a year? If the prices on housing, if the prices on homes drops because easy money goes away, that just means there's less sellers.
I'll give you the rationale. I think it's in 4 years, 20% a year, the price would effectively double. And I can't see prices. You're buying then a $2 million house. Now you have to pay a $4 million house with, then you're going to be mortgaging 3-point-something million dollars. I don't think it's possible. I don't think banks are going to be able to give a mortgage for that much. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong in this assessment, but it's unsustainable to continually double in a short period of time and still have the cheap credit available.
Especially, it's definitely unsustainable. You're right about that. The question is, do they care? Does the bank really care? Or do they know? Or I think they know it's bad. I think they know it's unsustainable, but I think they're going to test the limits on this thing. They're going to test it because they didn't raise rates last month.
So they
waited and then they raised a quarter point.
Don't think that's that they don't care. That's a big difference. I honestly, like, you can't say that.
Tell me what the difference is then between them not caring and them.
They just don't give a shit, and whatever happens to the
that's economy, not caring. That's not caring.
That's not. I don't think they're at that. I don't think they were ever at that stage. I don't think. Ultimately, they're freaking human beings. I don't think they have that type of disregard for their fellow citizens, their fellow human beings, that they will torpedo the economy, torpedo the country they live in, their neighbors.
It's already, Len, the missile's already in the water, man. It's already in the water.
It's been the last two years. But what you're saying is they just don't care. When you don't care, they would go to negative rates. They would have went to zero and then go negative and just continually. The fact that they're raising rates shows that there's at least a kindling, like a little bit of that. They're like, okay, they care a little bit. That's what I'm trying to say. So maybe we're dealing on a small point here. But I don't think they truly don't give a shit about everything. They do care about something.
I honestly, we're going to have to come back to this because we're 40 minutes in now. I don't know how, like, it's true. Dan in the chat is saying, like, we're dwelling on, they don't care. Either they don't care or they don't give a shit. But like, either way, the policy has landed us in a very precarious situation. And I don't think there's an easy way out.
There isn't. They went down this path as soon as they started the quantitative easing. Once they opened up the floodgates on that, printing money to that degree, how could you, like, you open up a box that shouldn't have been opened.
Exactly. And so Defiant is making in the chat the same point that I was making earlier. They're putting one slug back in the revolver because they know they're going to need to fire it again, and they can't fire from nothing. They got to fire from some recent hike, right?
The Bank of England raised rates twice in the past 3 months.
Who cares?
I'm just saying there seems to be a precedent right now that's being set by Western nations that they are starting to increase rates. Not to say that's going to happen here again.
It was before there was a commodity spike in the
like the last price one of... happened 2-3 weeks ago. So yeah, you're right. It did happen before the economy. Is this going to impact the Fed's decision in a week and a half?
It seems to be that it will. Like Zoltan, whose name I can't remember. He's like a risk guy for Credit Suisse. He was on Odd Lots from Bloomberg, the podcast, last week. You got to listen to this guy, because I listened to that show twice. One, because his accent's pretty thick, and two, because the stuff he's saying is like, it's mind boggling. And then today, some of the stuff he's saying starting to come true. Like for every one of these like giant gap ups in wheat, energy, whatever, someone is on the other end of that trade and they're getting wiped out. And it's going to take a while for the bodies to rise to the top of the water, but there are bodies there waiting to be discovered. And so today, I can't remember what hedge fund they had to do like an equity offering, Len, like a $5 billion equity offering. $5 billion. That's a lot of money these days.
That's nowadays that just buys you a yacht and a couple of cars. Yeah, what are you talking about? A lot of money. Things have changed.
Whatever. Let's go to the next story. Great discussion.
Let's talk about Yellen and interesting news coming.
I've been yelling for 15 minutes already.
Janet, my friend Janet. So she's been saying, she's been quoted saying that she believes that the Fed can reduce inflation without causing a recession. This is a great segue to this.
Okay, so does she not care or does she not give a shit? What, like, which one is that?
She doesn't care. That's my personal opinion. So it's different with her. She's getting paid $700,000 a pop to go speak at an event. So I think she's living in a different world than we do. So yeah, Team Biden, they believe that they hatched a plan that could massively benefit, that could be massively beneficial to the U.S. economy. And they will propel faster growth by reducing economic and racial disparities. That's one of the things they plan to do. I don't know if this is going to do it, but good for them that they're trying to achieve this. And this plan is known as the Modern Supply Side Economics. They gave it a name, Modern Supply Side Economics. Check it out, people. It's pretty funny stuff. And they plan to move forward with investments in boosting productivity, including a few things like funding research and expanding workforce and trying to get more women in the workforce. That's part of the goal of this one. And for those wondering where this plan was first unveiled, well, you know what? It was the World Economic Forum. So that should give you some insight of what this plan is all about. So that's what this stuff was all unveiled at the WEF. So keep that in mind. And this type of program seems to go against all conventional wisdom to wind down spending as inflation increases in the USA, which now sits at 7% for February 2022. And at first glance, it looks like they're trying to spend their way into further stimulating the economy. But this has to come to at a cost, Joey. And, you know, the higher inflation came a result of higher spending, and it was, you know, counterintuitive to do more spending to drive down inflation. So it doesn't make sense. More spending to drive down inflation? No, I don't buy what Janet Yellen is saying here. And you know what? I just want to go on a bit of a tangent. I'm not against the spending of money. You know, like, roads have to get paid somehow. Infrastructure has to get built somehow. This doesn't come from the sky. You have to pay for it. So this generally comes through taxation. So I'm not against this. It's just the nature of which they're trying to do things, I kind of shake my head. And this modern supply side economics is hoping to create incentive to work, save, and invest. Save? They're trying to tell people to save money? They're ludicrous for thinking that. I don't know. They're talking about supply chain bottlenecks, and this is going to solve it. I don't buy any of this crap. It's just, there's too much here that just doesn't make sense to me. The U.S. ran a huge deficit of $2.8 trillion in 2021. Trillion is a massive number. Please take a look to see what that looks like when you add up $100 bills and stack that. It's a huge fucking height. So a trillion is huge. So I just don't buy what they're going to be doing here. It doesn't make sense. And if you go back in time, actually, they were doing pretty good in the mid-2010s. So 2014, 2015, their deficit was at a point where it was $500 billion annually, which seems like a lot of money, but in comparison to today, it's vastly different. So clearly they're not going to go back to those days where they're having $500 billion annual deficits. They're going to rack up really high ones. This is another example of that. I don't know, man. It just makes me wonder, what the heck are they thinking by trying to spend their way out of a deficit? Just shake my head, man.
What are they thinking? I don't know, man.
I have no freaking clue.
Let's discuss one of our favorite metrics here at the CBP for whether or not the American economy is as healthy as everyone says. Are student loans accruing interest and being paid, or are they still frozen? Drum roll, Len.
They're frozen, man.
They're still fucking frozen. And they're going to be frozen again by the sounds of things, okay? So whatever Janet, Jerome, Joe, and Jen Psaki, okay? The band I like to call Depletewood Stack. What they can pretend all day that the economic recovery is strong, but they know it's not, okay? All the policies these guys are coming up with, it just burr, burr, burr. It never stops, okay? These guys are never going to stop printing. And the reason they're not going to stop printing, under the guise of investments in these completely out of like insane left field policy positions. Okay. Not saying that women in the workforce is a bad thing, but it shouldn't come from stimulus money. Okay. You can't just burr your way into success. We've seen this already over the last 5 years or 2 years, especially, but longer than that as well. The problem is that these guys now know that inflation is hitting households. Okay. They're starting to realize in the households that it's a problem, and the problem is accelerating. These are things we've been saying for months.
Isn't inflation a good thing?
This is what I mean.
They said it last year, right?
At some point, even people who are reading like Bloomberg, CNN, whatever, okay, they have to admit to themselves that they're getting the wool pulled over their eyes. Okay. There is no accurate reporting on this stuff in the American press. It sucks. It sucks. And like these people at the White House, they just want to run the printers. Like how do they think this turns out? This is what I don't understand, Len. It's not like there's no precedent for this. every major empire, every major monolith in history has failed when the currency failed. Why do they think it's going to be different now? Like, China, Russia, and India are starting to align on another payment system. That's 3 billion people, Len. Do they not see the problem? Do they not care? Are these people like in, are they like into the corpse of America for the internal organs and remaining like nutrition already, while other people don't even realize that this thing is dead? I don't know. But this is really not, it's not inconsequential. And the problem with the news cycle now, you know, a lot of people call it the 24-hour news cycle. I would call it like the, it's like an 8-hour news cycle. You know, we're talking about all kinds of stories in our breakaway chat with the Green Candle guys and Massa and Gandalf. And like people, this stuff just flies under the radar. People are desensitized, like you mentioned, to the word trillion. They're desensitized to inflation. They're desensitized to the war. All this stuff is just another headline. And by the time you realize the cumulative effects of these things as a family, as like a middle-income family, it's too late. It's too late. What do you do then, right? You know, I don't know what to say. Janet, you know, and also like, enough with the octogenarians. Like, what are we doing here? Like, why are we giving these people the keys? And then you throw Jen Psaki out there. You know, she honestly, I think Jen Psaki is very competent, but she's constantly being forced to lie, and the lie just gets more and more absurd. And
she's in a difficult position.
She's in a difficult position. Every press secretary is, okay? Whether it's Katie McEnany, Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
It's a shitty job.
Her, it doesn't matter. They're all in a tough spot. But like, if you were Jen, like, do you think Jen Psaki in her heart of hearts would rather be answering questions about whether or not Donald Trump said a mean tweet or whether or not inflation was going to get out of control after another trillion was printed? Because I think she'd rather be talking about the tweets. And I think, Len, by the time this is done, every American would rather be talking about the tweets.
I would think so. As long as they're equal type questions, if they're lobbying you softballs on the inflation and you're coming out hard on the tweets, maybe that's, you know, the inflation talk is easier to defend and to answer questions. But yeah, I just want to go back. You're right. Like, it's these people, they've been in there for a long time. They're the ones that created the mess. We got to just recycle. We got to get rid of them and get some
like,
new
like,
blood in
they
there.
Show these, like, I had like an existential crisis today. Okay. Looking at these videos of, it's like, oh, look, 25 years ago, Joe Biden said that NATO expansion into Ukraine was going to be a problem for Russia and cause conflict. And I go to the video and the guy's 60 years old in the video, Len. How this guy's been in politics for like 3 or 4 like generational lifetimes.
Yeah, there's pictures of him with his parents in the 70s and when he was elected, and I'm not sure where, but it was just incredible to see like how young
and he's
he
still
was
old. Yeah, but he's still old. He's still like 40 in that picture. You know what I mean? Like,
well, he's a career politician. Enough.
Yeah, but right? That's the problem. That's the problem.
Like, I don't want to really get into like what makes for a better politician.
You don't? Why? We're already at 45 minutes. Did you have other stories to talk about tonight?
Something.
Okay, go to the next one then. I already finished my water and my tea. I got nothing left to drink here. I'm parched.
So, okay. You know what? I'll go extra long on the next one, give you time to refill. And so the next story I have is essentially it's an alarm bell for people out there that want to get into DeFi, because there's been a rug pull that took place this past week in a project called, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Solidy. And it's funny that it's called using the word solid in this, but Solidy Exchange. Yeah, it really doesn't have any solid basis, this thing. But they just screwed over a bunch of people. And a lot of people actually had a lot of wealth locked up in this DeFi project. And from what I understand, the person running this, some dude named Andre and his cohorts, they're basically closing shop and leaving this project. And they're leaving it as of April 3rd, 2022. I'm thinking that should be April 1st, because it would be much more fitting if it was an April Fool's joke when they close up shop. But that's just my opinion. And from what I understand, one person even has his money locked up in this thing, this DeFi protocol, until 2026. That's going to be 4 years after this project closes shop. And it's absolutely insane that somebody has so much power in one of these projects. So this dude, Andre, simply just walking away. And he's saying the source code is open, and he's saying anyone can pick up the pieces from here. And it seems to me he wasn't in it for the long haul. So what he was in it for, I don't know. I don't want to speculate, but I could just report on what I understand. And it looks like he's leaving it up now to the community to figure out what to do with this project moving forward. And he's not just walking away from this one, but he's walking away from a number of different projects that he was involved with. I mean, could it be something like burnout? Maybe, I don't know. I don't want to speculate. It could be just about anything. But the one thing it shows us that these DeFi projects, and they use the word D for decentralized, they're not. They're anything but decentralized. When it hinges on one person being there to run the operation, that is centralization. That is not decentralization. It just goes to show you that a lot of these projects, they are tied to one group or one person in particular. That is scary because you have those people, they are the ones pulling the strings, and they could do whatever they want. And if they want to pull the rug on this at any time, they can. So this is another project which seems to be scummy in nature, and in the fact that he's just walking away, leaving all these people that invested in it and put their wealth and locked it in this project, and they're just now essentially screwed. They're going to be hoping that people could pick up the pieces from this open source project and continue on. It's still going to be very much centralized. It's, even though you're using the word DeFi, decentralized finance, trust me, people, it is not decentralized. This shit is centralized to the extreme. So be very, very careful when you're looking at any of these projects. It might be, you know, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. And here's another example why. I'm not a big fan of these projects. And you know what? I can't speak any more about it. Just be very careful. Invest in Bitcoin. You know it's going to be safe. You know that it's, you're not dealing with a centralized project. You know where it's going. You know what the roadmap is. Something like this, I don't have a freaking clue.
The roadmap. Well, okay, do you know this Andre guy? Do you know how long this project was running for? Like how long it was like, I don't know, like publicly available for? Between the time it became publicly available and the time that he left, do you know how long it was?
No, I'd love to hear. Was it weeks, months?
It was like a couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's sad.
So he leaves after a couple of weeks, and I saw Solidy or Solidly or whatever this thing is.
Whatever
called,
the fuck it is, anything but Solid.
Making this case on Twitter. Who was it? It might have been Kobe's Twitter. Kobe's been a good follow the last in a while for these like rug pulls. It was Pixelmon last week, and now it's this.
I just want to say one thing. Yochi said it's my only investment advice to don't buy DeFi. No, it's never investment. Not financial advice. Never, ever.
Even that's not investment advice. No. Yeah. Buy whatever you want.
Yeah.
So he's got this thread about, or like this, all the guys have this thread about how it doesn't matter that Andre left. He's not a core developer, and it's going to continue to thrive and grow because of like these metrics related to user numbers or developer numbers or the roadmap tracking, et cetera. It's garbage. It's all garbage. No one cares about any of that stuff in the altcoin space. They only care about one or two things. They're either buying derivatives on the mind of the founder or the founder's influence, one or the other, or they're trying to rip and flip every small cap token they can, right? And this is, of course, the way it's been for 5 years. You and I remember the ICO boom in 2017, 18. It was everywhere. Everyone was buying all that shit up and flipping it on retail, dumping it the day it went public. And you know, here we are 5 years later, they're still issuing warrants for arrest for these people who are involved in these scams. So this is nothing new. We've discussed many times, Len, on this program, the effect of like QE and STIMI on markets and the parasitic nature of VCs, the froth in equities, all this stuff. Okay. It's the same in the altcoin space. It's people with more money, all free and cheap money, than they know what to do with, including retail participants, by the way. Okay. They just dump it everywhere until something hits, okay? And then the insiders sell on open and out they go. That's it. Retail gets left holding the bag. Look at the charts, man. The charts all tell the same story. It starts up here. Okay, let me pull in the camera. I guess we got to go this side.
Yeah.
Starts up here, okay? Drops off a cliff. Then someone buys the first dip and then it drops off a cliff again. It's off the chart. It's gone. It's gone. Every ICO token is like that. Every Coinbase listing is like that. This is going to be the same. This staking thing, okay? Can we just call this what it is? This is a Ponzi. You're staking coins for some undefined amount of time, okay? Or some unrealistic amount of time, 6 years. You really thought, like you're a solidly retail investor and you decide in your unlimited wisdom that you're going to stake your solidly token for 4 years. I still think it's 2020. For 4 years, and in 4 years, you're going to come back and what? The staking is going to net you more solidly token. Like, do people not get concerned that you can just print these tokens ad infinitum to the end of the earth over and over again, and none of those tokens will have any value? Like, there's no more sure indication of a Ponzi than the thing paying you back it's like McDonald's ice cream tokens, right? Like you go to McDonald's and like stake your token there and come back. You're like, yeah, okay, can I have two tokens now? Sure. And McDonald's has a trillion tokens in the back, and they just keep bringing another truckload every week for all the people who are in the ice cream club. They're worthless. They're only redeemable in the real world for pennies now. Like you don't deserve my sympathy. You still have it, a little bit of it, but it's getting harder and harder and harder to take these people seriously. Because how many times, Len? How many times do you have to do it?
You can get burned, you know, once, twice, three times. And it's not like there's no history here. There's lots of history you could go off of. Just go online and just do some research. Wrecked. I just type wrecked, R-E-K-T in Google. The first thing that comes up is it gives you a listing of all the projects that have been rug pulled in this.
Since, no, you know, whatever. Does it really?
Yeah, it's really good. It's a news site where
wrecked
they try
news.
Yeah, wrecked news. Yeah, so it's really. I don't think they listed this on there, but there's a whole bunch of projects if you want to just take a laugh at some other projects. It's funny stuff. But it's, you know, we should actually do a wrecked report every week, something like that. Should we just make fun of these projects?
I don't understand, man. How can this keep happening? Who is still signing up for these, like? And the worst part is that retail buys the day it like gets onto Coinbase or Kraken or whatever. Like, why? Everyone already owns the stuff at 1/1000th of what you paid. Just do not get involved. Leave. Buy Bitcoin. Sit on your hands. Okay. Read a book, Fiat Standard. Read some Ray Dalio. Read some whatever. And you'll be better off, man. You'll be better off.
The only people that would have access to it would be the Russians that are now banned from like Coinbase or whatever, because after like 3 or 4 years, maybe their account would be unfrozen and they could get access to their funds on Coinbase. So maybe this is the only people it might work for. No, I'm not trying to make fun of it. It's really sad that people in Russia are getting screwed over because of stupid decisions by an individual or maybe a group of individuals that are at the top of Russia, because, you know, it's pathetic what's going on. A lot of people are
I'm not saying
suffering.
Anything else. I honestly, I don't know what to say about Coinbase. I don't know if you have this in the stories, but Coinbase like blocking Russian accounts for, you have it in the stories?
We could talk about it now if you want.
Whatever you want. You're in charge.
Let's talk about it now. No, it's true. So they blocked a whole bunch of Russian users from using their accounts. So like it goes to show you that they have a lot of power. And 25,000, I think, is the number that's being reported. So they've been told to do so. And I'm not saying they shouldn't have done it, or they should do it or shouldn't have done it. It's just sad more than anything. The people in Russia that are, and Ukraine too, I'm not going to just, it's a lot of people suffering over there, but it's because of some stupid decisions by a few stupid people over there that are just deciding to go to war. And ultimately, so many people are going to suffer as a result of this. People are dying, losing their homes, getting bombed to crap. And also like people in Russia, like inflation's killing them. The ruble has been devalued significantly in the past week or so. It's like, it's a sad story all around. And not only that, then it's impacting people in Europe. The Germans, they can't deal with the higher cost of energy because Russia is the primary supplier of their energy. So it's just a mess all around. And this whole Coinbase story kind of just encapsulates the whole thing together in just one story. So I don't know if you want to talk about anything more about Coinbase blocking these Russian accounts. And they're not the only ones. FTX did it too, if I recall
There's a few exchanges, yeah, who at least talked about it, right? And as a Coinbase bag holder, Len, like, I got to get out, but I can't now. The thing is, like, under $200. I got to hold it. I can't sell it that big.
Well, if you're going to sell it just for the purpose of them, like, blocking people, I mean, they're kind of forced to do it because they're regulated in the United States and they're there. And if they don't listen
to the difference between Coinbase and like the Coinbase response and some of the responses from like Nunchuk, for example, right? And I know that those two things are not exactly equal. Of course, I know that. But Coinbase should be saying, like, you know, we don't know who we're blocking because it's like this accelerated, you know, check process with these guys now. We got to find out right away, see who's doing what, and try and make best guesses. You can't cast a wide net like that during a time of imbalance in the global economy, a time of imbalance in the war zone. It's more harm than good for too many people. And, you know, Len, I got news for you. Okay. I get the feeling that not too many Russian oligarchs, warlords, and terrorists are using their Coinbase account. You know, like, we don't really have to freeze Coinbase accounts. There's better ways to do this, and I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed with the outcome, honestly.
Yeah, it's sad. I don't know. There's nothing more I could say from this, because it's aside from, like, a lot of people are suffering all over the world, but very much so in mostly Ukraine, but also in Russia too. So
yeah,
can't discount the people there too.
Did you see Adidas stop shipping all their products to Russia today?
Oh man.
Yeah, so no more Slav Squat. The Slav Squat meme is dead. There's not gonna be
Know what that is.
Oh my God. Someone turned this guy onto the Slav Squat. Send him the tweet with the Slav Squat in it.
Continues, yeah, please.
Continue. Let's keep going.
All right. Well, that's it for the A block, which was quite an A block at that. Oh, God. We'll transition to, well, no, I thought it was good. We could talk about some Canadian news now. Let's talk about number one, Bitfarms, and they provided their monthly production update. They're hashing away at 2.3 exahash per second. They mined 298 Bitcoin for the month of February 2022. So that averages about 10.6 Bitcoin mined on average per day. And of the 298 Bitcoin they mined, they put into custody 283. So they sold 15 Bitcoin, if my Len math is correct, just to keep the business lights on and so forth, because it's not cheap to run a Bitcoin mining operation. And right now they have 4,883 Bitcoin in custody as of February 28, 2022. That's quite a bit of Bitcoin that's on their reserves. And they have 7,400 new Bitcoin miners that are capable of hashing out 740 petahash. And they've been received in February or are in transit. So it's some have been received and some are in transit. So they're going to be ramping things up. All in all, it's good news for Bitfarms. Like, I'm an investor. I have a large bag of Bitfarms in my portfolio. So I say this, and I have... obviously I have exposure to them, quite a bit of exposure. So take that, what I'm saying, as the grain of salt, but I think that they're a good company. They're laser focused towards the cause. They're not doing anything else aside from mining Bitcoin. They're not doing Web3. They're not doing Ethereum mining. It's simply Bitcoin mining. And they're trying to expand operations in South America too, for better or for worse. That's what they're doing, because they have access to really cheap energy over there. So all in all, good news for Bitfarms. They're right now 2.3 exahash per second. Keep that number in mind, because we'll be talking about a company later today. That's, it's good news for that company. So yeah, thoughts on this, Joey?
I love it. We'll mention here that Unconfiscatable, friend of the show, Ben Gagnon, did a panel that other friend of the show, Gandalf, who was also a speaker there, said was really good. I wish we, you know, maybe knew about it earlier and we're doing the show a little longer, and we could have got, we could have swung down there to listen to those guys talk. It seems like Ben is doing a lot of the right stuff over there for Bitfarms. You got to think he's at the head of a lot of these decisions, where to deploy, what to buy, what to sell and whatnot. So yeah, man, happy to see that. And we like Bitfarms for a number of reasons. That you got a big bag, I got a big bag. So obviously rose colored glasses here on the CBP, but all the same, hard to find another miner more committed to the cause, though we have had some other miners who are like, you know, it's like adjacent to a spiritual mission, like Cathedra. I think those guys are like, you know, the Blues Brothers of Bitcoin mining. So on a mission from God.
Jordan was asking what happened to DMG today, particularly. I don't know. There's no news today with regards to DMG. There has been DMG news this past week. In fact, they reported on their February 2022 mining update, and they mined 63 Bitcoin, 63.05 Bitcoin to be specific. And they also added 12 petahash to their hash rate. And that brings them to 510 petahash per second. So really they're growing a decent clip. They did a very, very big jump last year from quarter three to quarter four. So quarter four, they're still in the process of getting the numbers, because their auditor disappeared, but the preliminary numbers are showing that they're going to be in a range of showing revenue of $3.5 to $4 million for quarter four, 2021. And in comparison to quarter three, 2021, they only had revenue of $1.7 million for quarter three. So quarter three, $1.7 million to quarter four, $3.5 to $4 million. That is a massive jump. So all in all, it's good news from DMG. Like, they're doing everything they can to keep moving things along. I'm not sure what happened today. Jordan was saying it dropped 20%. There's no specific news as to why it drops 20%, but you know what? Bitcoin miners in the past a couple of training days, they weren't all very good. Aside from one that I can say, that I think that was green today, it's been red all around.
Yeah, I think as far as the price action, like I think Amazon, I don't know if it closed down more than 5%, but it was down 5% at one point today. If those mega caps are moving 5%, the mega cap tech stocks, same thing. You're really going to get walloped on small cap miners. And that's exactly what DMG is. So I wouldn't worry about it too much. I was going to mention at some point today, maybe I'll save it for the after show, but I'll tease it now. I think you're going to be able to go shopping this week for a lot of stuff that you like, Bitcoin mining or otherwise. If this sort of repricing continues in the equity market, can't go wrong, man. The fundamentals on stuff like Bitfarms, DMG, Lux, all these companies we've talked about and talked to in some cases, they're not changing. One thing we've mentioned on the show before, and it's been confirmed by the guys who are in the C-suites at these places. The funding levels in 2017, 2018, when the big crash from 20 down to 3,000 happened, funding really dropped off for a lot of these projects. Capital dried up a little bit, but now you're not seeing that. It's the opposite. People don't care about the price. They care about the tech and the cheap energy and all this stuff. And so that money continues to be available to these companies. If you can stomach a 20% drop, whatever. I mean, then the S&P, the NASDAQ, I think is probably off overall close to 12 or 13% from the November highs now. So you're already, you know, it may have happened over a little less time, obviously, but you're seeing this sort of substantial fall from grace in equity markets more broadly. So it's risk off time. There's a land war involving a nuclear power in Europe. So, you know, strap in, enjoy the ride, see if you like that stuff. And if you do, go shopping this weekend or two.
So one thing though, it looked like for a brief period of time that Bitcoin miners were decoupled from the traditional markets. So they were going in one direction where, you know, everything else was going another direction. Doesn't seem to be the case anymore, but for a short period of time, it seemed like that was the case.
I think it may be the case again. It's just that like the war thing, I think really it forces alignment for sectors in the market. And I think that's what you saw. But I do think you're right. I think it's only a matter of time till this stuff decouples. I would love to see miners trade as energy and not as tech. But that's the story for another time.
So you know what? Let's talk about this because I was talking this past weekend and I was doing some thinking too before. I've come to an epiphany that I believe that Bitcoin miners are going to be extremely valuable in the next little while. And the reason why I'm thinking this, Joey, and shoot some holes in my argument because I could be totally wrong and off base here. But if you look at what stuff like Lockheed Martin are doing, they're the ones that are defending the US dollar primarily, because what makes the US dollar a global currency that you could trade on a world level? Well, it is the strongest dollar, yes, but how do they get the strongest? They use their might. They use their military might to muscle their way in all four corners of the globe. And without that, would the US dollar be as prevalent as it is today? And I would argue no. I would say, you know, it might still be strong, but not as strong as it is today. So the US military had a great deal of influence on how strong the US dollar is today. So what Lockheed Martin, I'm just using them as an example, and they're a company out there that is primarily defense, and money is spent on them, people invest in them, and they're there to defend the United States, and you know, by indirect exposure to the US dollar. They're defending that as well. Well, Bitcoin miners, you could say, would be doing the same thing, except they're doing it on a different level. They're defending Bitcoin. They're defending the Bitcoin network. If Bitcoin becomes something where it's traded on a world level, more countries adopt it, more people adopt it, the need to secure this network will be equally as important as securing the US dollar. All the money that you see that's being pumped into US military, I'm not saying it's going to be pumped into Bitcoin miners, but a great deal of money will be poured into Bitcoin miners for the reason you want to have stability in the network. These miners, yes, they are mining Bitcoin. They're getting every 10 minutes a new block is created and they're getting rewarded as such. But part of the process is they are being rewarded too by the providing hash rate to defend the network. So 51% of hash attack doesn't take place and so forth. So it really adds to the network itself. That's why I think Bitcoin miners, they are going to be worth a heck of a lot of money in the not too distant future, just because they are going to be there to defend this hard money, this hard asset, Nothing else is out there to do it. It's just simply these Bitcoin miners. That's just my thesis, Joey. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's true. I think the more valuable thing, medium term, 20 years, 30 years, let's say, maybe 20 years max, I still think is the energy, the energy synergy. I think that those companies are the most important thing to energy markets that no one is talking about. I mean, we're talking about it. We've talked about it, the sort of flexibility it offers a local market, because of the nature of the Bitcoin mining operations and how agile they are. But I do like this, you know, this is going to be protecting the global wealth system thesis. I don't think it's far off. Like, I was going to save this for Bitcoiner of the Week, but like Pantera today talking about, that's a $5 billion hedge fund, right? Talking about how they think Bitcoin is going to be the world reserve asset. Like, how come that's not like, so this is like 2 weeks ago we talked about this, and it's still the case now. Everything is sort of being buried by Russia, Ukraine. But if you're paying enough attention, you're really starting to see some pieces move here. And one of them is the catalyst of Russia, China, India aligning on the Chinese payment system, the Chinese payment rail as opposed to SWIFT. Then you have a hedge fund like Pantera. I would argue they fall into the manifestor as far as the destiny of the things they invest in and talk about. If they say that Bitcoin is going to be the world reserve asset, certainly they have some chips on the table and will be making moves to ensure that that's the outcome. And you're starting to see this stuff more and more, like the executive orders coming out inside of 2 weeks. I don't know how that's going to look, but the question I have now is, and this is not new. Fuck, Len, we're going cosmic on all these topics here, but I kind of like it.
It's a good episode.
So, yeah, it is. It is so far. So the thing I would just say is, and I've said this before, the thing that people don't realize about Bitcoin in the US, like regulating it or making it illegal, like the no coiners and the sort of haters and doubters say that that's like the death knell for Bitcoin. My view has always been that that is the death knell for the US dollar. If the day that they outlaw Bitcoin and make it illegal, it is an admission of defeat. And once other countries start to smell that blood, and by the way, they may already smell it judging by what's going on overseas. You know, if you have an impotent United States trying to tell you what you can and can't acquire as a value hold, it's not a good sign for the US currency. And I'll borrow a phrase that I've used on this show many times. This is not what a country and an empire with a lot of tread left on the tires does. They don't outlaw new stores of value and try and crush new technologies to preserve the old way of thinking in the name of maintaining power both at home and abroad. And this is exactly what you're going to see with a Bitcoin ban. So to your point, Len, I think you're right, man. I do think you're right. And I think it's closer and closer every day. The question is when, right? What's having so many dominoes fall. What's the last one going to be? I think we're really a lot closer than the average person realizes.
So what's the value of defending something that we use as a currency? That is the question I have. And I would argue that it's very, very high value that we have.
Unlimited ceiling. That's unlimited ceiling.
Right. And that's why I'm looking at these Bitcoin miners and I'm thinking, wow, there's an opportunity here. I'm happy I have them now. And some of them I'm down on and I don't really care because the long term is, I honestly believe that there's real opportunity here for these miners to be worth so much money. So much capital is going to flow into them. Governments are going to have to buy into Bitcoin miners or buying Bitcoin themselves to secure the network. It's just, I'm so bullish on this stuff. It's incredible. And the more I think about it, the more I just want to sell my house and put more money in this, but I can't live in Bitcoin. So I got to keep this house. Unfortunately or unfortunately,
I don't know, man. I'm very excited about the next few years. I think it's, you know, I'll just end this story with this since we're now closing in on like the third period here. I'll just say that, you know, we've talked a lot about this sort of gradually then suddenly thing and how that suddenly period is going to be very tumultuous for people who don't have hard assets and don't have Bitcoin, don't have homes and stuff like that. And I think it's, it's coming. It's coming.
Okay, let's move on. I'll talk about two more miners and we'll finish with the mining talk. because I covered them all already on YouTube if you want to watch it. But one thing, Joey, I want to hear your comments on before we go to the last one. Marathon, and I talk about them favorably just because they're going to be putting so much capital into their company to try to grow their company and get more hash rate. They're trying to get to 23 exahash per second by next year. So good for them. But as for the fourth quarter and fiscal year 2021, while Q4 2021, they increased their revenue 2,100% year over year. That is insane. These guys, they produced for quarter four 2021, 1,098 Bitcoin. And if for the whole year of 2021, they produced 3,197 Bitcoin. That is a lot of Bitcoin that they mined in 1 year. And if you look at for the, they also provided their corporate updates for March 1st. So for February 2022, they produced 360 Bitcoin in 1 month, 360, which is not too bad. And that's an increase quite a bit. In fact, 729% from the previous year. In fact, February 2021, they only mined 43. So that's a huge jump from 43 Bitcoin to 360 in 1 year. They increased their total Bitcoin holdings to 8,956. This company has the most, this is the publicly traded Bitcoin miners. I mean, they have the most Bitcoin on reserves. There are other companies like Tesla, for instance, or MicroStrategy to have more in total. But as for Bitcoin miner, Marathon has the most on their reserve. They haven't sold anything, I believe, for some time. October 21st, 2020 is the last time they sold any Bitcoin. They've been hodling ever since. And right now they're hashing out at 3.8 exahash. Remember, we're talking about Bitfarms, a 2-point-something. They're hashing out. Well, Marathon is higher. They're 3.8. They have 35,000 miners active. They're planning to go to...
Slam your hand on the desk.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot of... They're planning to go to 100% carbon neutral by the end of 22. And with that being said, they're going to go to 23. At least they have intentions to get to 23 exahash per second. Massive company. I know they're going to get there. I have no doubt they'll get to that 23 exahash. But wow, what a company we have here that's just going to secure the network. And you know what? It's kind of depressed in price when you look at the fact that they were investigated by the SEC not too long ago. So still maybe a good opportunity, NFA, but maybe a good opportunity to buy in it cheap. So keep that in mind.
$21.50 right now, American, yeah. For sure. Yeah, another 5% drop today. Yeah, I mean, look, it's not every day. And I love this argument from Mike Saylor too, right? And he makes it. And I know the gold bugs will say, well, they make their money investing in futures, blah, blah, blah. How many gold miners hold gold on the balance sheet?
Zero. Very few. They sell it right away for the most part.
How many gold bugs invest only in gold? Zero. These guys Schiff all have 5%. Some... Yeah, 5% or 10%. Like, this guy's whole career is shilling gold, and he only has 5% in his portfolio. How, Len? Like, the Bitcoin miners are skin in the game, man, in a way that no other, if Bitcoin is a commodity, let's say, no other commodity play is like this, right? Commodity miners get it, sell it, play futures contracts on it. They never hold. But Bitcoin miners are in it to win it. And because of that inelastic supply, their dedication and bullish attitude toward the asset drives, Dan from Iris Energy was saying last week, this positive flywheel, man. The flywheel runs in one direction over a long enough time horizon. Question is, can you stomach the intermittent turbulence? I hope you can. Like, we've only been in it for 5 years and, you know, we've kind of become accustomed to it, and no reason you can't do it too, you know, miners or the underlying. It's quite a time to go shopping, like I mentioned earlier.
Iris is one of the few Bitcoin miners, I think one or two or three, that were green today. So yeah, and that was unknown news from what I understand. I couldn't find anything about Iris Energy.
Why? It's because Dan green showed up on the market floor there. The guy's got a shoulders like a fucking bull.
Anyways.
So hey, no selling over here.
Yeah, he'll put you in a bear hug and that's it. So the last miner I want to talk about is Core Scientific. I've talked about them quite a bit in the past little while because I always said they're neck and neck with Marathon, the 1 and 1A. But you know what, Joey? I don't think that's the case anymore. I think we have now a clear winner in the hash wars. Core Scientific, my friend. Check this out. They mined in the month of February, just in February alone, 981 Bitcoin in 1 month. 1 month. They mined 900. That's insane. Their hash rate right now is 8.2 exahash per second. keep in mind the overall hash rate for Bitcoin is slightly less than 200 exahash per second. They're at 8.2 right now. That's an insane amount from one company, but they're not stopping there. By the end of this year, Joey, they plan to get, they hopefully people are sitting down for this one. By the end of 2022, they plan to get to 42 exahash per second. 42. That is an incredible number considering there's only 200 exahash right now in the total network.
195 today, 195.
So yeah, that would be 1/5 if everything remains the same. Things don't tend to remain.
I mean, it'll grow, but even if it gets to like 10%, it's like an unbelievable chunk of the network firepower.
That is nuts. That, so there you go. We have Core Scientific. They mined a crap load for the month of February, 981. Their hash rate right now is huge at 8.2. It's going to get even bigger to 42. That's just an incredible amount of hash rate. And they're going to be using 1.2 gigawatts of energy. That's insane, man. Like, you know, kudos to them. They have conviction. They know where they're going. And this is another one. They're right now, if you look at their market cap, it's matched with Marathon. So if you think this company is going to grow greater than Marathon, and you think that they're going to be getting more Bitcoin per month than Marathon, what do you think? This is going to stay at the same.
How much value you think like it is? How much value added is it that Core can play a close follower role as Marathon and the other miners sort of bust down doors regulatory wise? For example, obviously we talked about Marathon getting a little slap on the wrist not long ago. You know, it seems to me that Marathon and the bigger miners, as they've become big, they've been sucked up into Web3, other like, you know, the mining council and stuff like this, politics around energy consumption, whereas the little guys like Bitfarms, like, you know, Core's not a little guy, of course, but it's lesser known to the average investor, I would say. I would include myself in there. Before you started talking about it all the time, I didn't really know that much about it.
Oh, they just went public very recently. So it's
they were a huge miner before that, right? Like they were a big part of the hash rate before they went public, and we didn't really talk about them that much at all.
It's like
the
one who found them. It's like Great American.
So like, you know, is there value in these guys being a close second as far as, you know, like the next mover kind of theory? I can't remember. I think it's either the next mover or close follower theory, basically, where the first mover has the product, but the next best product is so close and can R&D at the same clip. And so eventually they will surpass the first mover just based on better quality once the first mover takes the bumps, you know, at sort of the front of the pack. And maybe Core is that company. I'm not sure, but yeah, it sounds like they're a pretty good candidate.
Yeah, I can't speak on that because I'm not sitting at the helm of any of these companies, and it's hard for me to say what if it's. I just don't know. And how much money are they putting in terms of like R&D towards Bitcoin mining rigs? I don't think so. Maybe for setting up infrastructure, you know, just placing things on shelves. Maybe that's what they're putting their money. But yeah, I don't know. And I just want to also double back to what they have. It's not like they have a very small number of Bitcoin under reserves. They're reporting they have 7,355 Bitcoin as of February 28th, and they've mined 981 in 1 month. That 7,355 is going to turn to 8,000 and change for March. And when they get the 42 exahash, they're going to get over 1,000 Bitcoin a month.
Well, it depends on when they get there. If they get there in 2 years, the block
this year,
half.
Okay, this year,
that's what they say. But if they get there, you know, every day that it takes longer, everyone else is deploying firepower too. So that 42 means something today that it may not mean tomorrow. You know what I mean?
Yeah. 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 I don't know. I think that's all good.
Bullish? Bullish financial advice?
There's nothing here that is financial advice, Joey. Absolutely nothing. So that's basically it. We could talk a little bit more if you want to just transition to Bitcoiners or no, I have neither Bitcoin or no coiner. So
are we doing shorter show today?
We can, or we can just keep going. I'm not sure because we went on tangent.
I mean, I'm happy to do a shorter show. I actually like this format where we actually just spitball back and forth to each other. I don't know if you did that on purpose or not, but it's
just more dynamic, I think. And I'm curious to hear what people say about this as well, because to be perfectly frank, the mining stuff, I've covered it all already on our YouTube channel. For the people on the audio side that haven't taken a look, I've been doing daily miner updates.
Gotta check it out.
If you want to see like what's going on with the miner, just go on our YouTube channel and I give you like the lowdown the day of what took place. And
it's like a 5-8 minute video, something like that.
I try to do it in 10 minutes. I try to keep it matching to the hash rate of, the block rate of Bitcoin of 10 minutes on average. And sometimes I exceed it, sometimes not so much, but yeah.
I like it. Well, let's do Bitcoiner of the Week. My Bitcoiner of the Week was going to be Pantera Capital for this paper they wrote on, you know, admittedly there's some blockchain stuff in there, but there is an understanding from Pantera that commodity prices, war, and the USD are in significant turmoil right now. And the outcome is far from guaranteed as far as going back to the system of the past, the Bretton Woods system. And I happen to agree. You happen to agree. And many of the people in the chat listening and watching happen to agree. And so to Pantera, I say, make it happen, baby. You guys have the capital. You have the firepower and the regulatory capture. Make it happen. Don't let octogenarians cripple what is the greatest financial technology ever invented. Don't let them do it. Don't let Nancy Pelosi get up there, rub her knuckles together like some kind of flying shit.
Who was that?
She's some kind of lizard person. I don't know. And so like, well, I mean, it's just,
it is a YouTube man.
Just a figure of speech. So like the thing is like, you can't let these people neuter innovation. Like I said before, for the sake of maintaining power and order, because power and order come from growth. And that's one thing the United States is undeniably lacking over the last 20 years is growth. And so to my friends at Pantera, Bitcoiner of the Week, you know, Len, if we were probably a few thousand listeners more per episode, we could maybe snipe somebody at Pantera for 15 or 20 minutes, but maybe next year, maybe after episode 104, maybe.
No, aim high, Joy. You know, I talked about Core Scientific being, you know, the biggest Bitcoin miner publicly traded right now. I have aspirations for getting somebody on from them on our show, and I'm going to do it. Like, this is something like it's a mission.
Tweet them, man. Tweet them.
I've started their business development officer followed me today. So I'm,
hey, there we go.
So we're getting closer and closer to having somebody come on. I would like to get him on a show too with that. So you know what? Aim high, Joey. We'll get there. You know, the millions of listeners, I think we could just rally them and have them pressure people to come on a show, the people that we want to get on the show. And to be honest, I don't have a Bitcoiner of the Week. I had a no-coiner. I don't know the name of this person, but essentially he's the dude, the UBI dude at the start of the show. That
Reddit
was
guy.
Yeah. That was so that was my no-coiner of the week. So I don't have anything to say on that. I'm not sure if you have a no-coiner you want to bring out.
I don't. I mean, there's plenty of them out there, but I'll you know, sack it this week and just say, look, don't get lost. One of the reasons we do the show, and I have, I found two things in the last 2 weeks. Okay. One, when it comes to like real important stuff on Twitter, I got to shut it off. I can't digest all the news on there because it drives me nuts, gives me anxiety, and I don't like that. So, you know, I've tried to tune out to a lot of the Ukraine stuff and still stay up on the finance stuff. In the same vein, like I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of good stuff going on in Bitcoin right now, a lot, whether it's this browser and the related extensions that are coming out, this sort of privacy-based browser, whether it's, I can't remember the name of that new implementation for privacy, Len, that I think we're going to try and get Chris Belcher on the show. Yeah,
he is coming on a show next month.
He is coming on. So
that's a coin join.
What is the name of the implementation? I can't remember now.
I think it's called Coin Join. That's what it's
no,
listed.
No.
Yeah, I don't think that's what it was from what I recall. It was so people that are wondering. This is in the what the heck is it called? Every day we get a couple of emails from the Bitcoin development
CoinSwap.
Oh, that's right. There you go. Yeah. So this is going to add a layer of privacy that he's trying to
build. I'm going
to have
to do a lot of work on that to be ready for that show. Because that's
both
like,
of us.
Yeah, that's deep for me.
Both of us.
That's going to be a tough read. I do subscribe to the Bitcoin Dev mailing list on the recommendation of Mario Gibbs.
Mario.
The show. Yeah. So I've been trying to read some of that stuff here and there. But anyway, to my point, it's easy to get lost in this warp of current events when there's a war going on because it's everywhere. And both sides are pushing a ton of media. I'm not going to get into the veracity of the stories. I don't know. You don't know. It doesn't matter. I would just say that you know, if you're listening to this show and if you're invested in Bitcoin, you've been able so far to swim upstream with a lot of success. because there's been a lot of people, probably in your personal life, professional life, investors telling you that Bitcoin was a bad idea, related equities were a bad idea, mining would never be an industry. They were all wrong and you were right. Feel good about that. But don't forget what got you here. Cutting out a lot of that noise in favor of Signal is easier during peacetime, and it's been much more difficult for me over the last 2 or 3 weeks. And so I imagine for you as well, both in terms of pulling good information and in terms of staying sane. So keep fighting the good fight. Don't get overwhelmed. If you're ever wondering whether you're missing something, there's a lot of good resources. This show is one. We think Marty and Matt do a good show as well, over at TFTC. Stefan Lavera does a more technical show. There's a number of different platforms to go get information. I know one of the things I've done in the last little while, I basically cut a lot of the current event stuff I listen to, the politics stuff, in favor of like basketball podcasts. I love basketball. So I start listening to those again, along with the Bitcoin stuff. It's a nice mix. Helps keep me sane. You know, got off the coffee so often, switched to tea here. All these things make a difference during times of turmoil. And of course, yeah, State of Bitcoin at the Green Canyon Channel, another one we like. Yeah. On which I will be appearing, I think, on Thursday. So these networks have information for you, and I think I have a lot of good people to follow on Twitter as well. And it's good for you and good for your portfolio, and doesn't get any better than that.
So what something that came up in the past, say, month or so that I've really been conscious of for myself is privacy. And, I don't want to name the reasons why, but everyone could probably figure things out. But that's one thing that I'm more cognizant of for myself is being more private with my data online. And so I've ditched my Windows, and I'm all Linux right now. And I actually just ordered a phone, a Linux phone, and it should be coming next week. I finally got the tracking number. So this is great news. So I'm going down a path that is going to be very interesting, but hopefully my information won't be out there for people to take advantage of. So that's, so to keep that. I'll even maybe post some unboxing videos or see some.
You should.
Yeah.
You should,
and then that. Just to give an update on how it's like because to be perfectly frank, when you use an iOS phone, when you use an Android phone, those are operating systems that were developed for phones. So they work very well in those environments. When you're using Linux, you're using a phone, an operating system that's not designed for the phone. It is essentially a square peg, round hole situation. So it's not the most user-friendly, and there's a lot of bugs. In fact, the phone I ordered is called a PinePhone Pro. It's still very much in a beta form. It's noted on the website that it's not for people that are looking for everyday usage out of a phone. It's very, very buggy at that. But if you could figure it out, if you can make it work, you have the ultimate in privacy that's built on your phone, and it gives you a sense of security that you probably don't have elsewhere. If de-Googling your phone is probably, like especially what's happened in the past month, my eyes have been open to a lot of things. So, yeah, so maybe I'll do that. I'll do the unboxing and maybe some. Some periodic unboxing at
Tahini sponsored by ShakePay. What do you think?
No, I'm going to unbox it well before then. I'm getting it next week, and I can't wait to get my hands in sync on it. It's such a cool product. It's essentially a computer in your hands, and it's basically convergence that if you want to hook up a mouse, keyboard, a monitor, it works. It's a functioning computer that you could plug everything in, and theoretically you don't need a computer. This operates as your computer. That's a theory, but it's not there yet. So
I'm hyped, man. I'm hyped. Let's wrap it up, Len. Then I guess so. You're gonna be happy about the price of Bitcoin in U.S. dollars: $38,429. One point one percent ish bump from the beginning of the show.
In Canadian, I got 49,176. We got to do these shorter episodes more often. Let's do a 10-minute episode next week.
I like that. I really like that format. Because I feel like I always got a lot to say, but I'm like checking the time in the A block, especially because I know we got a lot of stuff to talk about in the back end. But that was really, I like that quite a bit. Rock solid.
Well, luckily enough, we covered a lot of it already. I covered a lot of it already on the YouTube channel. So there's rehashing a lot of the Bitcoin mining stuff. It's just, essentially repeating the same thing over and over again. We had a good discussion on the A block. I'd like to hear what people's opinions are. There was some news from Lux. Do I have to throw it at somebody's asking? I mean, it's a company we talk about.
We'll do it in the, you want to do it in this show or the after show?
Let's do it now. Let's just get that.
Last story here. Just showed up in the chat.
There's two of them, and I'll explain why. So number one, Lux. Luxfolio, the company we talk about on a weekly basis, they had their February 2022 update. They are now mining at 139 petahash per second, which is the exact same hash rate they were in January, so they've been flat. They mined 19.7 Bitcoin in February versus 20.01 in January. So why did they mine less in February? Well, the hash rate goes up over time, and plus they maybe got unlucky on some blocks in February and maybe got more lucky in January. And they hold right now equivalent around 85.3 Bitcoin. That's 83 Bitcoin and 31 ETH. So they have some ETH that they could transfer over to Bitcoin. And they're moving on. They have their 2 megawatt facility in New Mexico, and they're going to be ramping that up to 15 megawatts per second. So they have aspirations on increasing their hash rate. There's one more I want to talk about. There's a reason why, Joey.
Hit it.
Ocean Falls Blockchain. Have to talk about them because Odin is a very good friend of the show. This is a company that they plan to go public in the very near future. So right now they actually announced they signed a letter of intent with West Coast Marine Terminals. And this gives them a mining capacity of 80 megawatts by the end of 2024. This is really good because they're right now hashing, they have miners at a 2 megawatt facility. That's it, with clean energy. So from going from scaling from 2 megawatts to 80 megawatts, that's a substantial jump. And from what I recall, 25% of the company's revenue, they were planning to come from Bitcoin mining. They might have to readjust this variable because if they're going to 80 megawatts, I think there's bigger proportion of the revenue is going to be coming from Bitcoin mining.
Yeah. And
that is very bullish news. This is a company that's going to be IPOing, I'm assuming, in the next month or two. I could be wrong. So when it does come out, I'm going to report on that. So keep that in mind. But yeah, they're ramping up to 80 megawatts by end of 2024. Great news. Good for Ocean Falls.
Can't go wrong, man. We like Odette a lot. He sent us a nice note the other day. Might be time for him to come on and give us an update about the goings on over there at OF. Cheap power. If you got cheap power, you're right. Your bottom line mix is going to have to adjust for that because Bitcoin wants your power and you will want to give it. So it's only a matter of time.
I'm done with the miner. I just had to get Ocean Falls in there. Yeah, I got to give Odin some kudos here. So thank you for providing us the info, Odin, and I'm happily reporting it.
100%, man. If you're listening in audio, head over to YouTube. If you're already on YouTube, stay here. We're doing the after show, and we will otherwise see you on Wednesday for our next interview stream with
Jaime
Garcia, right?
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
Bitcoin Festival co-founder, co-host, and good Bitcoiner, friend of the show, wealth of knowledge. So we're looking forward to that quite a bit.
I can't wait to hear more about the Chivo wallet and what's going on in El Salvador, because I believe he's from there and he still has family there. He lives in Saskatchewan, if I recall correctly. So anyways, we're going to talk to him.
So make sure you come for that. And otherwise, take care.
Yes, sir. Take care, everyone.